Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Hello, and welcome to the Trusted Exchange Framework Task Force. This is now our third meeting. Thank you for being with us today. We will officially call the meeting to order, starting with the roll call. Do we have Denise Webb?
Present.
Arian Malik?
I'm here.
Aaron Meary?
Good afternoon.
John Kansky?
I'm here.
Cheryl Turney? No Cheryl? And I think I skipped over Carolyn Peterson?
I'm here.
Okay. Sasha Termott? Not yet. Steve Reedy? No Steve. Cynthia Fisher? Cynthia? Anil Jain?
I'm here.
Okay. Kate Goodrich? Okay. David McCallie?
I'm here.
Mark Savage?
Hello, here.
Noam Arts?
I'm here.
And Grace Terrell?
Here.
Okay. So we may circle back about halfway through just to check to see if other members have joined, but at this point, I will turn it over to Arian Malik.
Hey, this is Steve Reedy. I don't know if you heard me when I got on. I'm here.
And, I did not. Thank you, Steve.
And this is Cheryl Turney also.
Okay,
and
great.
And Sasha Termott.
And Sasha, great. Anyone else on the phone that I did not call? Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
All right. So this is Arian, and we're going to walk through the most exciting part of our overall charge. Actually, I think permitted uses and disclosures is the most exciting part of our overall charge. But we're gonna walk through the incredibly exciting set of definitions and requirements for qualified HINs. And as a reminder, just relating to the overall flow, we spent our last meeting on the RCE, today on QHINs, this Friday on permitted uses and disclosures, and then Monday on privacy and security in the HIMSS special. Then we'll go dark a little bit to write up draft recommendations and spend a couple of meetings reviewing the draft recommendations, which lines us up for the high-tech meeting. So as I think we all know, we've got a pretty heavy schedule ahead of us. If we go to the next slide. So with regard to the qualified HIN, I think first of all, we need to establish whether it's a QHIN, a QHIN, or a qualified health information network. The choice of the appropriate acronym is incredibly important. But here's a set of questions that we're looking to ask or get answers for, get some perspectives for. And I'm going to add to this just based on the last meeting that we had relative to RCEs. I think the consensus for the RCE discussion was that we should refactor maybe some of the relationship between the RCE and the qualified health information networks. So maybe also ask the question about which of the roles and responsibilities for a qualified HIN should be set in policy versus the ones that should be set via ongoing discussion amongst the qualified health information networks and in the RCE. But one is, is the way that the qualified HIN defined meet the policy goals? And I define the policy goals of achieving broadcast query or achieving the ability for a provider or a patient to discover the records for a patient regardless of chosen technology and also regardless of the size of the provider organization. I know in discussion I've heard a lot of, I think, appropriate concern about small and independent practice and their ability to achieve these goals. With regard to the capabilities for a connectivity broker, is the chosen model sufficient to achieve the policy outcomes? With regard to transparency, including participation agreements, fees, and supporting the US CDI, do we have sufficient mechanisms to address qualified health information network transparency? There's been a lot of discussion that I'm aware of relative to fees, fee schedules, and whether the way that fees are defined improve, impede, or otherwise address sustainability for qualified health information networks and innovation for qualified health information networks? And then, you know, a catch-all, is there anything else we should, what are the criteria we should consider or contemplate relative to qualified health information networks? I'm going to pause and just look from the group to see if there are any high priority, not detailed, but high priority items that aren't on this list that we should be discussing.
This is Noam. I have just one comment that sort of bothers me about all of this. To some degree, we're putting the cart before the horse, and I just want to get that out there, that we're talking about, in today's call, the definition of a qualified IN, as you said, within the policy framework that the document presents. On Friday, we're going to actually talk about the acceptable uses. I'm sorry if I'm not using the right phrase.
Permitted purposes, yep.
The permitted purposes and perhaps something about them. It's not clear to me we're ever going to actually talk about use cases more specifically. But I have a problem with the way the permitted use cases, I'm sorry, the permitted purposes are presented, and with the basic functionality, particularly from a public health perspective, that this is only about broadcast query. So if you're asking me to have the conversation today in the context of broadcast query, I sort of do it under protest because I don't accept that as the necessarily the correct or complete functionality. So it looks like you've sort of accepted it as the frame within which we're going to comment and discuss this document. Sorry,
super useful. Yeah, so super useful feedback. I'd ask you, when we talk about the capabilities or the proposed capabilities of a qualified health information network, that we assume for the purposes of this discussion that the permitted purposes are what they are, and in particular that public health is a priority use case. And if you believe that the definition of a qualified health information network is insufficient, I'd ask you to bring that up when we talk about the definition and the notions of a connectivity broker. Does that make sense?
Yes. The issue is that broadcast query is what's insufficient.
Yep. Okay.
The definition of the human is the premise of broadcast query. That's all.
I hear you. So I see a couple of hands up, David and Mark, or three now, and Cheryl. So David,
yes,
in that order.
Okay. David, first, I propose we call it QHIN for the purposes of speeding our extremely limited time. Second, I'm worried that we have way too little time for such a complicated and important topic. It's the essence of the draft. So I register mild protest that we're not going to get much of this covered in an hour, at least based on how long it took us to discuss it internally. But third, more and less facetiously, more to the point, I agree with the notion that these are ill-posed questions because they are mixing technology and architecture with principles. So the fundamental question is the wrong question to ask. Does the QHIN support the goal of broadcast query? That shouldn't be a goal. The goal of QHIN should be something like making patient records accessible regardless of the point of care, as Arian,
yep,
you started the conversation with. So
yep.
I think I'm going to answer my questions in that context. So it'll get repetitive and boring, but I just would warn you up front.
David, I completely agree with you. I think you heard me silently rewrite rewrite the sentence on the fly. Support policy goals relating to access to data regardless of size or setting, and then look at the proposed architecture with regard to those policy goals.
Right.
I think that's a useful frame.
Yep.
Mark.
Yeah, so as important as all of this is, I also want to lift up how we factor in patient-generated health data as an interoperability use case. I don't see much on that, but I think it's a functionality for, it goes beyond broadcast query. Don't know where you want to weave that in, but putting it out there.
So, Mark, maybe the way that I would think about that would be, and maybe we can placeholder this discussion, but the way that I would think about this is that a qualified health information network, a QHIN, should be somewhat content agnostic and somewhat respondent agnostic, and that the U.S. CDI would be the place where PGHD or other kinds of patient-generated data would reside. But you know, maybe you're raising the question about the patient as an actor, both as a source and as an active query with regard to the QHIN architecture. Am I framing that right?
You are, and I'm also making sure that we're thinking of information flowing in multiple directions.
Yep.
So it's
perfect.
So that, which is not clear from much of the language that we're seeing in the document. So that's why I'm raising it.
That's why I frame this as patient as an actor, both in terms of as a source and as an accessor, as a key policy goal that the QHIN should be addressing. All right, Cheryl.
Cheryl Turney, my point was, in addition to those questions here, I think we need to talk about authorizations and disclosures, because as you read it in the framework, it sounds as if the QHIN should be the holder and purveyor of authorizations and disclosures. And quite honestly, it may be a technical architecture where there is a patient portal provider, and that would seem to make more sense to be part of that component rather than a responsibility of the QHIN itself, unless what we're trying to say is that the QHIN should be able to transmit those, and then I agree, but that's not really the way it's worded today.
Okay. Great considerations. And Carolyn.
I just wanted to voice my support for the way you framed that, Arian, and the comments of the previous speaker in terms of patient as an actor and information flowing in both directions and a need for the ability to handle data coming from patients created by patients. Thanks.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. So let's make sure as we're going through this, number one, that we separate – I'm just hearing the feedback – number one, that we separate policy goals from architectural enablement. Number two, that we look at the needs of public health and the needs of patients as an actor, both as source and querier, with regard to those policy goals and the chosen enablement, and that we look at authorizations and disclosures and make sure that we've factored the responsibilities for those two areas appropriately with regard to the approach, the policy approach, and the enablement approach that we take with regard to QHINs. Does that, it seems like that covers the comments. And thank you for providing really good, I find it really, really useful to frame up, you know, are we going in, vectoring in too deep, or should we take a little more of a broader role? All right, let's go to the next slide. So I'm going to, again, silently, and maybe in this case not so silently, reframe this. So let's note that, first of all, the way that ONC frames up in the TEFCA draft, the way that ONC frames up a health information network, it's any organization that improves information flow or facilitates information flow among multiple parties. And then ONC creates a term of art called a QHIN. That meets the definition of a health information network and does the following activities. And as I said, I think with regard to these activities, we need to have a somewhat explicit acknowledgement that the goal of these obligations is to facilitate information exchange, meeting the needs of multiple provider types, including small and independent practice. I think we ought to add, relative to Noam and Mark and Carolyn's points, that also includes the patient, both as querier and as information source. And so with regard to those policy goals, the goal is to be able to locate and transmit electronic PHI between multiple persons and or entities electronically. have mechanisms in place to impose minimum core obligations and audit participant compliance. So basically serve as a point of policy enforcement with regard to the legal and contractual obligations. Control and utilize a connectivity broker service. And a lot of the discussion that we'll have will get into the definition of what a connectivity broker is and whether those connectivity broker whether the connectivity broker concept is sufficient to achieve the policy goals. Be participant neutral. And again, there's been a lot of discussion relating to what the definition of participant neutral is and whether that's sufficient to achieve some of the transparency goals that a QN is supposed to achieve. And actually exchange data in practice in a live clinical environment. Not just being a policy shop or a technology shop, but actually facilitating information exchange. So I'm going to punt the controls and utilizes a connectivity broker service until the discussion of the connectivity broker, which is the next slide. I want to look at, so if we go back up, sorry, yeah, thank you. I want to look at the other components here, which are number one, the policy goal of being able to locate and transmit EPHI between multiple persons and entities, have appropriate mechanisms in place to allow this to be legally enforceable, the definition of participant neutrality, and the definition of active exchange, and get comments on this particular definition. And I see that David has his hand up, and call for other folks to put their hands up as well. And there go the hands. So we're going to do David, John Kansky, and Mark Savage. And anybody else who wants to put their name in the queue, let me know. Go, David.
Okay. So I have a lot of comments for when we get into the details on the next slide of the connectivity broker. I'll save them. But I'll make the high-level comment that I think, again, the question is a little bit framed poorly. The question is really, what are the policy goals of the QHIND, and are those the right policy goals? And I think that for the most part, if you read between the lines, I think they probably are, but couching it in the language of a particular architecture like the query broadcast model is where I think we're going to get into trouble. But maybe the details of that can come up in the next discussion. I wanted to ask a question on the participant neutral, and maybe someone from ONC could answer, or maybe I'll just register as a question. It really wasn't clear to me whether this precluded a vendor from being a QHIN for their own customers. I think most people have interpreted it that way, but I wasn't sure if that was the express intent. Is it possible to get a comment on that?
So, hold on before we go there. So David, I'm going to put your first comment as expressing the perspective that the TEFCA should be very explicit about the policy goals that a QHIN is enabled to achieve, and put a clear separation between those policy goals and the technical enablements. And I think based on the discussion, I framed up one of the policy goals relating to provider use cases. I think Mark very helpfully framed up some policy goals relative to patient-based use cases, and I think Gnomes framed up some policy goals with regard to public health that we probably should get to, and make sure that we're making good recommendations for how those policy goals are framed up. Second question then is the intent of the participant neutrality to preclude an EHR vendor, as an example, from being a QHIN on behalf of its EHR? I'd also do a silent framing of question B, which is the definition sufficient to address the concerns, and maybe it would be useful to be explicit about what those concerns are from ONC, is the definition sufficient to meet the concerns that this definition is seeking to address? So sorry, go ahead. Zoe, is that you?
Yeah. Hi, this is Zoe from ONC. I would say that I think we did, our intent here was to define a qualified HIN in a way that would preclude just a single vendor or a single HIE or any kind of just like single entity from being a qualified HIN on behalf of its own participants. So I think there's some, we want to like take into consideration any issues with conflict of interest, I think would kind of would apply here. So having just one single EHR vendor that's serving all of its participants, you know, that there would be a clear conflict of interest if they all rolled up, you know, to that single EHR vendor. So we're really looking for multiple organizations to kind of come together to be able to support, you know, multiple types of participants and end users.
So it occurs to me with regard to the language and the policy goal. So I think you've nicely articulated the policy goal. I think ONC has a concern. I'm going to frame this up and test for understanding. It seems like ONC has a concern about that this market will turn into a bunch of technology vendors who seek to achieve information exchange on behalf of their own individual EHRs, and that we'll get some level of market failure because that won't be sufficient to address the needs of other actors, such as small and independent physicians, or other actors, or may engage in activities that seek to benefit one particular segment of the market to the exclusion of others. Is that a fair framing in terms of the policy concerns that we're driving this definition?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And then I think just kind of on top of that, kind of going back to the way the question is phrased, you know, what would the intent really is to have a small amount of qualified HINs, and we believe that is necessary to support broadcast query at the, you know, scale of, you know, a national network. And so, you know, we're looking for a qualified HIN to kind of be like an aggregate of data for their participants and to kind of be a gateway. And so, you know, we are trying to get to that kind of limited number, but there is a question about whether, as you guys were bringing up, is that necessary? Is there another way that we can get to the kind of scale that we're looking for without having such a limited number of connection points at the top?
Gotcha. Perfect. And nicely framed. It occurs to me that the way this is worded, there's a really trivial kind of two-step that you could do, which is to form a not-for-profit organization that might, for example, be some of the provider organizations that use your technology, have them run some of the technology on your behalf that they procure through you. It just occurs to me that I think there are some ways of sidestepping this particular definition that might not meet the policy goals. That's just a personal comment. I'm going to go on to John Kansky, Mark Savage, and then Sasha's in the queue as well.
Yeah, this is John, and my comment was participant neutral specific. And while I raised my hand 5 minutes ago, I think the last 5 minutes has helped to somewhat make my point. My point is that there is tremendous market confusion over what the definition of participant neutral really means. And I've come to the conclusion that there's no point in reading the words in the TEFCA. I've sort of inferred what I've inferred from hearing ONC speak to this a number of times, but that disconnect is not helpful. So ONC needs to clarify what they really mean in terms of QHIN requirements on participant neutral. And the problem that creates is that it's difficult to discuss or think about whether it's the QHIN requirements are framed correctly if you're not sure what that participant neutral requirement really means. And then finally, just a comment on what Zoe said, and I think you addressed it, is that there's a presumption on ONC's part that they want a small number of QHINs, but they're not really sure. And I generally think that specifying architecture with policy is kind of a bad idea, so we should try to avoid that.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, John, is number one, I've heard this from a number of people. It would be helpful for ONC to be explicit about the policy goals with regard to participant neutrality, separate from the actual enablement. And then I'm also hearing you register a concern that the policy goal of having a small number of QHINs may not be an appropriate policy goal. But I guess that just to be fair, I think it's if that is the policy goal, then let's make sure that we test the enablement relative to that policy goal. Mark, Sasha, and then David wants to get back in.
Yeah, so on the overall requirements, I am looking for something around usability. CURES talks about it. The interoperability roadmap talks about it. Words like without special effort, things like that. It goes beyond just locate and transmit. So my concern with usability actually isn't just around QHINs. I think the draft as a whole could use more discussion about that. What it means, of course, I think there's probably a lot of room for discussion about that. One place that in the language in the draft that does help here is about the APIs. So it's a place where we're recognizing that that they need to be able to do something with usability as well. They do have some capacity to do that around APIs. Again, the issue of usability.
Quick follow-up. Are you looking for the QHIN to define the actual user interface, or are you looking for the QHIN to have a role to improve the without special effort implementation?
Since we're focusing more on policy than architecture, I'm looking more at the broad goals here. I think interface can be one place. I think APIs can be another. But just noting that in other places we've said just access and transmitting isn't enough. It has to be, you have to make sure that the information is useful and usable.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. Sasha.
Hi, folks. This is Sasha. I really agree with a lot of the conversation about participant neutral in the comments so far. It seems like if we specified the outcomes more clearly, we might be able to debate the best approach. My theory is that, to some extent, the goal of the overall connection of all of the QHINs together should be neutral and accessible to all of these parties. But it seems possible that that neutrality across the entire network of networks could be achieved while also enabling certain QHINs to focus on particular types of users. And that might be EHR vendors. It might be particular QHINs that just focus on a certain other area. And so I think if we clarify sort of the concerns of overall accessibility and access across the network, we might be able to better evaluate if there are policies that need to affect a particular QHIN, or if we're really concerned about a policy directive that should apply across all of the QHINs.
Gotcha. So you're looking for maybe that policy goal to be attached to the practice of QHINs in practice. You're looking for that policy goal to be attached to the operations of QHINs in practice, even if there may be particular QHINs that are not may carve out one particular segment of the market. I don't think I'm speaking out of school to say that at least, and I shouldn't say that this is aimed at one particular actor, because I think there are a number of EHR vendors that have sought to achieve information exchange among their own particular EHR vendor. And as I sort of quasi alluded to, I think people don't recognize that Care Everywhere isn't actually an operation of Epic. It's an operation for a not-for-profit of provider organizations that do governance for technology that's built into Epic. But I just maybe thought it would be appropriate for you to comment on from the perspective of a large technology vendor that serves a broad swath of the market. What the best way to achieve the policy goal of making sure that QHIN operations are available to the broadest swath of the market ought or might be, because you both have a fair amount of experience doing a large amount of exchange in practice. And then I think you'd also, people also note that that exchange tends to benefit the folks who use a particular technology asset. And again, I'm not calling out Epic by as a particular example. I think there's a large number of organizations that have sought to achieve that. Maybe Epic just gets blamed because they do it better than anybody else. But I would love your comments on that particular topic.
Well, I think as one portion, I didn't actually understand that the intent of this provision was to enable accessibility to small providers. So I guess from a kind of editing perspective, I don't think that that intent is clear in this provision, and I don't know that I think this is achieving that, if that was one of the primary intents. You know, I talk to Epic users, and they tell me that, you know, some of the rapid onboarding that they've been able to do through Care Equality to, or through Care Everywhere to Care Equality, has been really streamlined. And when they get excited about the use cases and opportunities of the Trusted Exchange framework, they'd like to see a similar type of rapid onboarding. To me, that seems advantageous to the whole network if there are existing networks that are able to rapidly onboard and then be exchanging and accessible to all of the other participants. And I'm not sure that I see that the step in the middle that happens practically of creating other networks, onboarding with them, and then connecting to the Trusted Exchange framework has an end benefit of advantage to the Trusted Exchange framework at the endpoint.
Okay, so super helpful. So I think what I'm hearing you say is there's a lot of benefit for building streamlined onboarding into the technology that you support, or into the technology that providers use, and that benefit helps to address some of the things that Mark was looking to call out relative to without special effort. And number three, I think you're looking to be more explicit around, again, the policy goals and objectives with regard to participant neutrality.
Yeah, and I think we could think of a lot of different opportunities here, right? If we throw out some other examples, since you called me out, but, you know, if Apple decided to be a QHIN for patients, or if Amazon Prime in the future offered some sort of interoperability Prime, there might be a whole variety of different services that might focus on specifically patient segments of the market, or specifically other portions, and it would still be advantageous to have them be able to connect if
yep.
they otherwise met the expectations of a QHIN. And if we're worried that the other requirements of a QHIN aren't sufficiently transparent or neutral or what have you, then we should specify that in those details.
Super, super helpful. Thank you for that comment. David, and then we'll go back to the connectivity broker obligations themselves.
Yeah, so I appreciate Zoe's clarification on the intent of that somewhat cryptic language. My pushback would be, I think in line with what Sasha just said and others, is that if a QN has certain obligations, legal and moral, as having signed the common agreement, that should be what they're judged by, not who they have aggregated and agreed to expose the data. So there's a requirement that the QHIN must respond to a query about a given patient and produce all the data that it has about that patient using US CDI, then current CDI, as long as it's compatible with permitted purposes. All the language, put a period at the end of it and say that's what a QHIN should be. Then there's an independent question about auditing and transparency of QHINs that I don't think is automatically solved just by saying the QN has to be a third party. They still have to do audit and they still have to be transparent. So decouple those two, define how your audit is supposed to work and what's transparency defined in terms of, and then define what a QN's behavior has to be. They must respond and let it be at that. I think you don't need to go further.
So I'm going to pose a question back to, and I apologize to the rest of the group, and we'll give people opportunity to jump back in. I'm going to pose a question back to Sasha and to David. And I can imagine that one of ONC's policy issues when they thought about doing this in practice is that if the QHIN rules aren't defined well enough, you might have a network effects model that actually works against broad-scale connectivity. And what I mean by that is when we've seen networks form and aggregate, they often form around the largest participant networks. Those serve as natural attractors. But if there's no forcing function to aggregate beyond those large organizations, you may end up with a set of information exchanges that work in practice for a particular subtype or a particular subgroup of, for example, provider organizations or users of a particular EHR vendor, and that, again, not due to intent, not due to information blocking, not due to malicious behavior, but just as a side effect of network effects, end up being not scalable to the 20% of the market that isn't covered by, you know, the big five EHR vendors, as an example. And I just want to pose that question. A, is that a useful policy goal to articulate or a useful policy concern to articulate? And B, maybe pose back, do you understand why ONC might have chosen to put these requirements in practice? And are there alternatives to these requirements that might achieve the same policy goal? And I'll start with Sasha.
Good.
I was going to hold David. So I think that if we have an overall policy goal of, you know, affirmative action for small participants in the trusted exchange framework, we should articulate that as an overall policy goal and then discuss the best way to implement it from a policy perspective. Maybe there are expectations for the RCE to enable that. Maybe there's provisions for specific QHINs that advantage having certain types of participants that we think are underserved in the current model. But I'm not sure that I see how the proposed participant-neutral language achieves that.
Okay, fair, very fair. So number one, let's articulate the policy goals. Number two, test, if that's a policy goal, test that policy goal relative to the language. David? And then I see John Kansky has a hand.
Yeah, I think Sasha, I agree with the points that she made. Let me add a couple of other clarifications on what I said before. I fully expect that there will be multi-participant QHINs. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if that's the only thing that actually makes business sense in the long run. I just don't think that it is a requirement that the QHIN has to be multi-party to meet the obligations of a QHIN on the network. I think a single entity could fully meet the obligations of the common agreement. And I don't see a conflict there. I don't see an automatic conflict there. And if there is a conflict, it should be surfaced by whatever the rules are around transparency and audit. So by no means am I suggesting that a large vendor could become its own QHIN and refuse to talk to the rest of the world. That would absolutely be inconsistent with the common agreement. If you're a QHIN and have earned the designation as such, you would be obligated to respond to any external query about any patient that was being queried that's inside your vendor network. Absolute, no question, you must respond, as must every other QHIN. That's the rules for QHINs. But it doesn't really matter what you have inside to decide how to do that. If you've got a population health service in place that already has all that data ready to go and it has an MPI and a record locator service that doesn't happen to follow the particular IHE protocols that were listed in, that will come up on the next slide, so be it. You're responding as a QHIN, and that's what you should be held accountable for. Now, I'll add one footnote, is that I don't think that every query automatically needs to be broadcast, because I think many physicians would be perfectly well served by directed queries when they know exactly what they're trying to get and they know where to get it from. That doesn't need to be spread to the rest of the network. But any participant who wants to do a broadcast query absolutely should be allowed to, and that would be, again, built into the definition of what it takes to qualify as a QHIN. You must broadcast if you are requested to do so by a participant or by an individual, and you must respond to the outside world no matter what. Again, assuming permitted purposes and all those caveats about legal transactions.
Yeah, and I just want to point out that the issue that I was framing was a slightly different issue, which is that if you don't have multi-participant networks, you could end up with a, with, you know, 80% of the market being served, but 20% really being not addressed. But I'm not going to push that point anymore. I'm going to go to John Kansky, and then we're going to go to the very fun definition of a connectivity broker service.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick, Arian. Actually, it's the question that you posed as to whether trying to make sure that that 20% of the market, whether it be consumers or small providers, whether that's a good policy goal. I think that it is, And in the context that 21st Century Cures is requiring ONC to publish a TEFCA, I just wanted to suggest that it might be a much more direct way to get there to focus on the obstacles and removing them that have prevented that from happening, whether it's market failure or otherwise, rather than trying to specify an entire design of a interoperability system for the nation that we believe will address that. I just think there's a simpler way.
Got it. Thank you. Very helpful. Okay, let's go on to the next slide, which says all of Section 3.1. maybe I could turn it over to Zoe in terms of the definition of connectivity broker capabilities, and then we'll surface that discussion back to the group.
Sorry. There's just a lot of language in 3.1, and so thought it would be easier for people to reference their documents. So I think kind of looking at the just kind of like the general workflow of the qualified HIN that they would receive, a query from their participants or end users with whatever internal technical specifications or policies that they've specified. The QHIN would send out that query to all of the other QHINs using the specified standards in Part B. The receiving QHINs would then query all of their participants and end users, again, using their internal structure. They would send a message back to the initiating qualified HIN saying whether or not they have information or if they don't have information. The initiating qualified HIN would then ask the responding QHINs that they did have information to send them that. The responding QHINs would receive all of the data from their participants and end users. They would aggregate all of that data, or not aggregate, I guess they would kind of combine it into one transaction, send it back to the initiating QHIN, who would then send that information back down to their participants and end users. So that kind of general structure and workflow.
Thank you for the summary. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there. So we've got, I think relative to public comment, we've got about 15 minutes left. We also want to get to fees. So I'm going to also ask us to go forward one slide relative to other aspects to achieve transparency, and then also the next slide with regard to the definition of fees, in particular the definition of a reasonable allowable cost, the uniformity of fee schedules, the definition of reasonable and non-discriminatory criteria for addressing pricing models, and then the notion that TPO can recover attributable costs but not individual access, public health and benefits determination use cases, as well as the notion that QHINs may not oppose any royalty, revenue sharing, or other fees on the use of EHI once it's accessed. So I would in general note this fee schedule notion as seeking to achieve common carrier requirements for QHINs, regardless of access model, and in some cases above common carrier requirements with respect to individual access, public health, and benefits determination. So we got a lot to discuss in what effectively is 10 minutes, and we've got a couple of hands up already. So this is really a call for discussion relative to the definition of a broker, and also relative to fee schedules and fee discussion. And we're going to go to, we got David, Noam, and Sasha in the queue, and go to David first. David knows the rule here, which is always put your hand up first.
Yeah. I've done enough of these. I have a little macro. No. So on the broker stuff, I think the generic comment I have is that the functional behaviors here, I think, relatively make sense. The specific details about all of the architecture and standards probably do not. I think that should be left to the RCE to figure out amongst the stakeholders. You know, for example, it references fire standards for population health. Those standards would be a complete mismatch if they continue in the direction that they're currently headed for a query broker model because they require asynchronous fulfillment. Direct peer-to-peer asynchronous fulfillment wouldn't make sense in a QN model as it's currently architected here. So I'd say stay away from the architecture. Let the RCE work with the stakeholders to figure out how the QHINs work. Just specify what their behavior has to be. And then on the fee question, go ahead.
Sorry, David, just in terms of specifying the behavior, at what level do you think the behavior should be appropriately specified?
Well, I think for the core use case of patient treatment, what makes sense to me is kind of what I said a little earlier, which is that any QHIN would be obligated to respond to an outside request for all it knows about a particular patient using functionality that's very similar to XCPD and XCA, and in fact might actually be XCPD and XCA since those are well understood technologies. And then on the other direction, any of their internal participants or users who wish to request a complete query, a full federated query, the QHIN would be obligated to broadcast that to all of the other QHINs and assemble the results and deliver them back. So it's mandatory response, optional query out, depending upon the need of the user.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah,
that'd be the summary. The fees, I really struggle with fees, and I wish I could be as dogmatic as I sound on all these other things. I worry that the only thing that will make sense in the long run for QHIN to QHIN fees is either price fixing by setting a price and saying, you know, the RCE will approve a certain price that we think is adequate to cover the costs of being a QHIN, or zero. Because otherwise, a QHIN is going to aggregate valuable patient information behind its walls and then be able to charge whatever they want for access to it, because you could pretty much drive any size truck through the loopholes of attributable costs. So I'm really concerned about the fee model. I wish I had a better solution.
Just as an editorial comment, a chair's prerogative, I think people who followed my Twitter account, to the extent that you've been able to follow anything that I do on Twitter, know that I've got a weird overlap concern here between common carrier requirements and then the definition of 21st century cures with regard to provider obligations and information blocking, where my summary would be if 21st century cures intends for all providers to respond for all permitted purposes, common carrier requirements might well make a lot of sense. But if 21st century cures intends that some permitted purposes require common carrier requirements, establishing common carrier requirements for all permitted purposes could end up driving strange market behavior. And I think people have noted the ability to create a pseudo QHIN that does nothing or maybe has one or two participants to get around the active participant piece, but then is able to freeload on everybody else's network. But that's my editorial comment. I'm going to go to Noam.
Yes, again, just real quick, the description here of, and not to belabor this point, the description of connectivity broker service is one thing. But again, I object to the assumption that this is all that a QHIN needs to do in order to satisfy the uses that have been defined, particularly the public health permitted use. A connectivity broker service simply doesn't help that.
Can you provide more specificity in terms of what public health use case would not get addressed through a connectivity broker service? Or rather than talk about a connectivity broker service, let's describe it in functional terms. Let's assume the functional term is requiring being able to query for a patient and in some cases a population and get back all of the information known nationally about that patient through a set of owned and federated queries to other QHINs. Which public health use cases would not get addressed through that definition?
Just about all of them. Public health is by and large and almost completely about pushing necessary and required data stipulated by state, local, and tribal law and policy from EHR systems to public health. whether it's immunization reporting, electronic lab reporting, electronic case reporting, cancer reporting, all of them. It is not about anyone querying for anything, by and large. There are some exceptions, but by and large.
Thank you. So thank you for that. That's what I thought you were going to say. And, you know, my comment in the high tech to ONC is that when you actually look at the policy goals for a QHIN, they're really aimed at that particular goal. And they step over a number of other goals that are served by, for example, directed exchange, either through direct or for pushed public health messages, reportable labs, and the like. And not because they don't think they're important, but because they believe, because ONC believes they're well served. As an editorial comment, again, I think some of the language around one-stop shopping or, you know, single on-ramp is actually not true in practice, because it's a single on-ramp for a particular set of functional needs, but not a single on-ramp for other functional needs that may well get served through other networks. And I think it's important, Noam, to your point, that we be clear about what it is the single on-ramp is intended to do and set appropriate expectations relative to things that it's not going to do.
And notice I didn't reply to you in any technology-based answer, that this is not about direct or any particular technology.
No.
It's about the concept of push transactions supported by a national network.
Agreed. And I use the word directed exchange rather than direct intentionally as well. Yep.
Right.
Hey, Sasha, let's go to you.
Thanks. So I agree with David's point about the leaving the broker architecture questions to later definition with some of the other standards. In fact, I would push even that we specify the expectations of a QHIN without necessarily even getting as specific as to say it had to be accomplished using a broker. I think that if there are networks that could accomplish the same outcomes without a broker, that is something we'd want to be open to as an innovation. Regarding the fees, I struggle with that one too. The part that I worry about is that I would like this, for it to be sustainable, to have an incentive to use resources wisely and to not cost shift. So, you know, when you develop a large database, you have a lot of incentive to make sure that queries on your database are efficient and perform in a speedy fashion so that your users are happy. And when we create a large network, we're going to, for usability purposes, which were mentioned earlier, similarly want those queries to be speedy and efficient for the users. And to some extent, the individual folks making those queries don't have any incentives to do that because they aren't necessarily sharing in the cost of the architecture and the network in the same way, so that a programmer who puts a lot of time and attention into making a really wise query at a very specific frequency to very specific recipients maybe has the same cost as someone who writes a really stupid loop and hits the system up, the whole system in a broadcast query, you know, every minute, and really taxes the architecture without an incentive to not do that, or a cost sharing that makes that person pay more than the person who put a little bit more time and thoughtfulness into it.
Thank you for that. Mark, for 1 minute, apologies, and then we're going to go to public comment.
Quick point on the prior slide on transparency. Probably implied, but the API should be open and published for all the reasons we've already talked about for the past 2 to 3 years.
Perfect. Lauren, let's go to public comment.
Okay, great. Thank you, Arian. Operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
Yes, thank you. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line's in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, we ask public comments to limit themselves to 3 minutes. Operator, do we have any comments in the queue?
No comments at this time.
Okay.
Monday.
If there are no comments in the queue, I will turn it back over to Arian for the last 5 minutes.
Great. So first of all, I just want to acknowledge we went through a lot of content very quickly, and I would encourage task force members, if they've got thoughts that they weren't able to express, I see a lot of really good stuff going on in the chat. I think we're going to make sure that we aggregate the chat comments, but also just encourage people if they've got more thoughtful comments that they weren't able to get through in this task force meeting, that we get that out in the open. I'd also say that if this task force feels like we have a lot more to discuss than we were able to get done, notwithstanding some of the awkward timing of HIMSS, we can find a place to add more time. So if there's any particular topics that you feel like were under-addressed, let us know. Given that, I'll do another call for comments for the next 4 minutes for folks who want to address more topics.
Arian, we might need a minute or so to talk about what's planned.
Oh, thank you.
Meeting.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. That's why it's good to have a co-chair. Zoe and Lauren, can we go to the next slide talking about our next steps? Not that one, this one. All right, so just an acknowledgement that our next meeting on Friday goes through the not at all hard to discuss and not at all controversial topic of permitted uses and disclosures. So I expect that one to be a fairly fun-filled meeting as well. And then we go to privacy and security, also a very easy topic. And then we start going through recommendations. We really have only 2 meetings to review draft recommendations. I'm open at this point if we feel like we haven't gotten through enough to contemplate doing 3 meetings that week. We just are under the gun relative to our ability to present full recommendations to the committee on the 21st. And I see that Carolyn has her name up, her hand up.
Yep, I just had a point relative to slide 8. That was the one about other business criteria and such. We didn't get to that. There's 2 things I want to put on the table with regard to the QHIN eligibility. First, the demonstrated ability to accept and transmit patient-generated health data. That could be from things like wearable devices, in-home sensors, patient-reported outcome measures, mobile apps, these sorts of things that patients are using. I know certainly just in terms of general PGHD, there's a real concern among providers about how to accept it and handle it and what to do with PGHD. I think in terms of patients getting value, we really need to be working with groups that have some kind of experience in that area. Secondly, also some demonstrated experience working with patients or consumers in some kind of customer service function, whether that be healthcare or financial or some other industry that has a significant amount of customer service. We've been talking a lot about the tech side requirements of things, but for the patient consumer users, it's really going to be a lot about customer service more than tech. We need to capture that. Thank you.
All right. With 1 minute left, I think we should adjourn.
Hey, Arian, it's Mark. Can I just
really?
Pile on with what Carolyn said and to say that expertise around the table also helps when we talk about developing new use cases, which is something for QNs and RCE to be thinking about.
I think I heard Zoe try to jump in.
Yeah, sorry. Just before we adjourn, can we just, and my computer froze a little bit, so maybe I'm not seeing it, but if we could just go to the homework slide just to make sure we just review what people should be looking at for the next meeting on Friday.
Thank you.
There.
Yep.
Yeah. Zoe will get out some slides, or actually the team will, beforehand with questions.
Yep. And this is in the slide deck that we sent out to you, so please do your homework, read your 21st Century Cures, and understand the permitted uses and disclosures for the next meeting. Thanks for such an engaged task force. We got a lot to do, and we churned through a whole lot of really meaty topics today, I think very efficiently. Thanks all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.